tells us where we're going. It's music from a country where music was not so long ago banned. Noel, welcome to the studio.
Hello, John.
Music is from?
Well, it borders on Turkmenistan. It borders on Uzbekistan. It shares a border with Iran. And, of course, it's Afghanistan. We are off to Afghanistan.
And the Taliban would not let us hear music a few years ago.
The Taliban were about as keen on music as they were on belly dancing and alcohol. Absolutely. It wasn't popular. But it is making a reappearance. It is. Yeah.
So what's happening in Afghanistan today? We know that there are Australian troops there. We know it's a very difficult region to be in. More than one empire has crumbled in Afghanistan, the Brits and the Russians, and now the Americans and the Australians finding it difficult.
Well, yeah, exactly. The British couldn't control it, the Russians couldn't control it, the Soviet Union couldn't control it, but the Australians are holding the line, John, with the assistance of the Americans. But look, it's a difficult place, of course, even the surrounding neighbours. It's been one of those key positions between Pakistan, which is an ally of the West, technically speaking, and, you know, surrounded by other countries which are not in any way allied. It's a real melting pot and always has been. And Care Australia happens to be the biggest organisation, probably the biggest NGO in the whole country, you know.
Really?
Care Australia.
In Afghanistan?
Absolutely. In all the provinces, they've got nearly 800 staff on the ground there, including including indigenous staff. You know, most of them are actually indigenous staff, but about 800.
Wow.
Probably the biggest NGO there. And hopefully on the line right now is Jamie Terzi. Jamie's a Melburnian, and she should be there right now.
Hello, Jamie speaking.
Hello, Noel speaking here in Sydney. You're based in Kabul. What sort of scope is CARE's work? How many staff, how many offices, how many different particular works?
Well, we have almost 800 staff in Afghanistan, and of those, only about, I think, 8 or 9 are expatriates. And we're operational in about 12 or 13 out of the 34 provinces. So we have something like 6 or 7 provincial offices and then another probably 20 sub-offices underneath that. We're quite a large organisation here. I think we're one of the largest non-government organisations.
What's the main stuff that you get involved in your direct work with CARE?
Okay, my position is Assistant Country Director. We have a women's program, which is essentially humanitarian assistance for widows in Kabul. We have rural assistance programs, microfinance, emergency relief and rehabilitation programs, water and sanitation, and a very large education program. So for me, one of the challenges is getting my head around very different and disparate programming areas. So one day you have to know about irrigation, another day you have to know about education, and you never quite know what's going to come up for you.
In terms of the women's programs you conduct, how are you approaching those in a culture such as Afghanistan?
Well, you know, you can't do any programming in Afghanistan without being culturally sensitive. So the way we approach our women's program is to be very consultative, talk with the community, identify needs, and always work within a kind of rights-based approach, looking at how we can improve women's access to resources, women's access to education, and advocate for those rights. So it's a very softly approach, but promoting and helping women when they're working towards improving their own lot.
And how much improvement have you seen over the 4.5 years you've spent there? How do you judge those improvements, say, in just women's rights?
You know, it's a hard question to answer, because often you read articles written about women in Afghanistan and the articles say things like, 5 years after the Taliban, women are still being oppressed in Afghanistan. And to that I say, well, you know, these kind of changes that we're trying to make here are generational. You don't make them in 5 years. So I've seen some small changes, mainly in Kabul. You, for example, see far fewer women in burqas, but that's only in Kabul. In rural areas, women are still very much struggling. What you do have now is you have women in parliament. You have a far greater number of girls in school than ever before. You've got women being able to use their voices to be employed. These changes are fantastic. You know, I walk through Kabul and I see families going for a walk. 4.5 years ago, 3 years ago, you would never see families just going for a walk. So things are definitely changing. But, you know, the important thing is that they don't change in 2 or 3 years. It's going to take a long time to see that change consolidated.
What about the security for you, as well as those families along the street in Kabul itself?
Well, the security situation here is up and down. It is actually getting worse in some ways. There are certainly restrictions on my movement that I didn't have 2 or 3 years ago, but at the same time, we as an organisation are much more careful about the risks we take. So it's an unstable country. You know, politically, things are still very much in a state of flux. ISAF and NATO are still conducting battles in the south. The security situation really depends on where you are in Afghanistan.
When you say there are things that are more difficult for you to do than, say, 3.5 years ago, what does that practically mean about your movement and access in and around Kabul?
I would take taxis 3 years ago, and I would drive a car. Right now, in my current job, I'm not allowed to drive a car due to security restrictions. I would go for a walk and not really worry about it, whereas now I'm very careful about going for a walk. I would do it during the day and if I had a friend with me and if it wasn't very far. But, you basically can't live a completely normal life here, and that can get quite frustrating.
Well, how do you keep that together and keep your own motivation up when you've got oversight of so many projects and, for example, can't drive a car?
I guess in some ways you just get used to it. You learn to live with those kind of restrictions and that kind of stress. And I guess it's everybody has different ways of coping. For me, because I've been here for a few years, I have a very strong social support network. And I think really that's probably the main thing that keeps me sane. Some of my very close friends who are both Afghan and other expatriates who you can just get some downtime with, have dinner with, and be away from the office with.
What's the most dangerous situation you found yourself in your work in Afghanistan?
I think it's not so much what was the most dangerous for myself, but I think possibly the worst experience was when a school that my organisation, prior to working at CARE, had been operating was blown up in an explosion, and it was in a very Taliban-dominated area. And just being woken up in the morning and being told that your school has exploded and that you'd lost, you know, potentially up to 10 children, I think that was possibly the worst moment for me, where I just felt absolutely gutted that perhaps, you know, the decision that I had made or something that we'd done as an organisation contributed to the death of those children. That was really hard, I think.
What was the outcome of that? Were there 10 children killed in that blast, were there?
No, there weren't 10, but there were 3, which didn't make it much better, I have to say. But I guess it's one of those moments that puts you in touch with the risks, not just to yourself, but to the people that you're working with, and the fact that people are willing to take those risks, and that's what you do. You have to do that to try and make a change. You can't just kind of, you know, come to a country like Afghanistan and be a tree hugger, as they say. You know, I think there's a certain element of maybe toughness is the wrong word, but, you know, it can be being aware of your surroundings and being prepared to deal with the fact that things don't always operate in your way and they won't always be implemented the way you expect it to happen, but it will happen, and the country's got a long way to go, and you're a part of that, and you can help people move forward, and I think that's really important for me.
How often do you get a chance to go back to Melbourne to, you know, have R&R?
I probably don't get back to Melbourne more than every 6 months. The longest I was away from home was about 18 months, but I'm trying to get back more often because my parents are getting a bit older and I'm just beginning to miss my friends and family more than I was 3 or 4 years ago.
What for you is the most critical part of what CARE is doing there? You've got oversight of a lot of projects, but what's the thing that grabs you as so important and gives you a sense of urgency and commitment?
Oh, it's a difficult one to answer. I guess I'm personally really committed to the education program. For me, it's so fundamental, you know, to see kids in schools, both boys and girls, just being able to build a future, because without that, it's so hard to put anything else in place. So, you know, being able to see children graduate, being able to see teachers teach when they weren't able to teach 2 or 3 years ago. I guess there's a real sense of satisfaction there. And I think it's something that everybody supports. Everybody always thought that maybe the community wasn't ready for education. But what I've found in my time here is that each year the community is more and more ready for education, not just for boys, but for girls as well. And that's really encouraging.
What about how you're regarded? How do you dress? How do you appear in public? And how do you find your acceptance, certainly as a female leader in care?
I find that with my colleagues, the Afghans I work with, and my peers, I have no problem at all. You know, the Afghans are very hospitable and very respectful. So I really enjoy working with my Afghan colleagues. And I think in many ways being a woman doesn't actually matter, because your position, if it has authority, then people respect the position and just put your gender aside and work with you. Now, that might not always be the case if I was an Afghan woman, but as a foreign woman, I've had no problem at all.
What about in terms of deportment and dress? Have you had to adapt the way you would appear, say, on Brunswick Street?
I guess sometimes I do dress the same way. Basically, I wear very long skirts and I keep myself covered. I wear a headscarf out of respect when I'm on the street, but in my office I don't. I find that over the last couple of years, I am less conservative because women in Kabul are generally less conservative than they were 2 or 3 years ago. Often I'll wear a shalwar kameez to the office, which is, you know, the kind of loose pants with the long top over it that they tend to wear in countries like Pakistan. You can wear that here as well. I guess I show far less flesh than I would in Brunswick Street or anywhere else in Melbourne. And you get used to that. It's kind of nice not to have to put yourself on display, I have to say.
Jamie Terzi, Assistant Country Director for Care in Afghanistan. Thanks for joining Sunday Nights.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, Noel DeBien. We get to some very interesting places and meet some people, really. They're doing what we all ought, aren't they? So thank you to them, too.